Thank you for tuning in to Don't Keep It to Yourself. I am your host, Sharice Shockley. The purpose of this podcast is to provide a safe place for an open dialogue that will enable my conversation partners to be seen and heard.
So, Renza, okay, everybody, I know I say this with every episode, but I think this is probably one of the good things about Don't Keep It to Yourself, because I get to interview some really nice and amazing people. And one of those people that I have the pleasure of talking to today as my conversation partner is Renza Shabilia. There are so many things that I love about Renza. So many things. And one of them is that she just cannot keep anything to herself when it comes to being, I mean, like, she's like the vocal advocate. She does not have a problem calling people out when there is no representation of people with diabetes, whether it's at a conference, on a panel, if industry fails to have somebody there at the design process, whatever. Renza is that person. And to prove it, if you go back and look at her Facebook feed, if you have the honor to be able to have access to her Facebook account and her Twitter account, there's a common theme. There's nothing with us, nothing about us without us.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on your amazing podcast. And I'm so excited to be here. But to be honest, I'm excited anytime I get to have a chat with you, Sharice. And I'm so honored and privileged that we do get a chance to do that quite a bit. But how did I become so outspoken? I guess it's probably a combination of a lot of things. So if I look at, so my family's from an Italian background. We don't know how to be quiet. We don't know how to not share our feelings. You know, we share our feelings even if people don't necessarily want to hear them. So that's the first thing. My mum, she retired this year, but before she retired, she was the president of a trade union. So she's always been very vocal about workers' rights. And so that was sort of the environment that I was brought up in. My dad, or, you know, I always know what my dad thinks because he doesn't keep things to himself. But all of us are paled into insignificance because my sister is just this incredible, feisty, brilliant, amazing woman who, you know, sets her sights on something and then doesn't just go and get it. She then exceeds and excels, and, you know, so that was my family life. But then, you know, I was educated by nuns in a Catholic school for 6 years and taught by feminists, some feminist nuns, but the other teachers were all very feminist and all very much about, you know, I remember learning the power of language, I guess, when I was at school, and I can still remember being told, you're not aggressive, you're assertive. And the way that just the power of flipping those little words, like a word like that, went from making me feel self-conscious about wanting to say something and stand up and object and challenge the norm to, hey, actually, I have a right to do this, and I can do it in a way that, you know, I can do it in a way that's assertive and that's, you know. And so that was my schooling. And then I'm always around people who are very dynamic and, you know, so that's sort of, I guess, that formative stuff. But then I've also been working in an environment that is very old school and trying to break down a lot of those barriers, trying to break down a lot of those traditions. I've never been the sort of person who just does what she's told without questioning it. So why should I do that in my diabetes life? So that's where it came into as an advocate. So that's how it happened. I'm very sorry that's who I am.
9 years ago this week, we were in Dubai for the International Diabetes Congress, Federation Congress. And once again, there was, you know, Renza being Renza, this powerhouse who just owned the floor. And I've seen you grow even more, right, with the Language Matters movement and how you've been a very vocal participant and creator, along with a lot of other people. There's times where you could just make it about you and you don't.
No, no. And that's been really very important. So I've worked in diabetes organizations now for 19 years. And one of the things that I've always been really passionate about is making sure that it's not my voice that's heard, because quite frankly, if people were to listen to me talk about diabetes, yeah, it's tough because diabetes is tough, but my diabetes and my diabetes environment isn't especially tough. You know, I live in Australia. We have a great health system. We have a fully taxpayer funded health system. We have heavily subsidized drugs. We have heavily subsidized diabetes products. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to afford the things that are not subsidized. I have great access to my healthcare team. I'm health literate. So if I was to stand up and say, this is what diabetes is like in front of policymakers, they'd be saying, why are we giving you any money then? You're doing fine. We're not increasing funding. And that was something that has always been really important to me, is that I am one person and I'm not in any way less, my story is no less important or valid, but it's just not representative of every single person with diabetes. I always say I am the most representative person of a, well, now 47-year-old woman called Renza living in inner Melbourne. Hey, you want to hear about her? I'm the person to hear from, but I'm not every person with diabetes. So that's why it's been really important that we've been able to put in process other ways to elevate that voice of people who are not me, who don't look like me, who haven't had the upbringing that I've had, who don't have the access that I've had, who don't sound like me. You know, where in Australia do we get to hear the voices of people who don't speak English? We need to make sure that we're hearing from people who, you know, English isn't their first language, which means that their healthcare situation is going to be very, very different. So being able to make sure that we can do that has been really important. And, you know, I've never, ever said that I speak for anybody other than myself. But I do believe that some of the things that I say, when I say we want this, I do believe it's universal. When I say we want respect from our healthcare professionals, we want access to drugs and to diabetes technology and to diabetes education, I'm pretty sure that everyone with diabetes actually feels that way. I'm yet to find anybody with diabetes who says, no, I'm quite happy to not be respected by a healthcare professional. I'm like, really? Okay. If that's you, that's fine. I just haven't heard that person say that. But I've never felt that I am representative of anybody really other than myself.
Right. And that's one thing. And like you said, to meet someone with diabetes who doesn't want respect, who doesn't want access, who doesn't want basic, knowledgeable, accessible education. Right. Yep. So, yes, you can speak for me on that any day, because it needs to be loud. It needs to be a universal conversation, right? This is what we want. In Australia, there's a huge Aboriginal community.
Right. Yeah.
What has it meant to you to make sure that their voices are heard and that you're making sure that you're bringing them along for the journey? And when I say you, because you speak about diabetes, not just in Australia, you speak about diabetes globally. You have a platform, you have a website, you have a blog, you have all of these different platforms. So tell us about that and why it's so important.
Well, the first thing I'd say is that I've done a lousy job of it. I believe that I haven't actually been anywhere near as inclusive and consultative and thinking about it's probably, and I say this with embarrassment but also honesty, that when I think about where it was that my attentions were focused, making sure there was good representation, I've never done enough to make sure the voice of Indigenous Australians have been heard. And I guess that's probably changed in recent years since I moved to a job for our national diabetes organisation, because we have a dedicated team that looks at diabetes and diabetes in Indigenous communities. And we have this amazing, amazing manager in that program, a guy called Chris Lee, who is as cheeky as all get out, but he's just brilliant because he's not afraid to say that's not necessarily what you're going to see in my community or in our communities. And I think for me, the best thing that I've been able to do is to be quiet because I haven't done that enough. Be quiet and listen and learn and try to understand how it is possible for me to make sure that when I am saying you need to hear all people, that one of those people that is sitting at the table is somebody who is from an Indigenous community and has diabetes. So that's something that I guess we have, we've done more of in recent times, and I'm hoping that it becomes something that I am far more focused on in, future times as well. But it unfortunately hasn't been everything that I have done. I certainly haven't done enough of it.
For you to say that you haven't done enough speaks volumes.
Yeah. I think a big part of it is always, I guess, knowing, but not knowing what to do, not knowing who, where to go, where to include people. And, there's always been, there's always this consideration with everything that we have done as working in diabetes organisations is, okay, so we have to look at vulnerable communities and we have to make sure that we're considering them. And that was always someone else's job, if you like. But I think it's probably been since I've been at Diabetes Australia, where I haven't had like a specific portfolio that's been my thing, where I've realised, hang on a minute, how is this being done across the board? It shouldn't necessarily just be we have a program for people, for Indigenous Australians. It shouldn't be like that. It should be everything that we're doing. It's like, okay, where is the component and where is the thinking of and where is the voices of that community? Just as where are the voices of, people, culturally and linguistically diverse people? Where are we making sure that everybody is getting a seat at the table? And that, I guess, is what I meant when I said that, it has always been my thing to make sure that people don't think that everybody with diabetes looks and sounds like me. But now I'm far more committed to making sure that if I'm sitting at a table, every other, representative of a person with diabetes, they can't look like me either. So, there's like this really big movement against having all male panels at any conference, for example, which I think is brilliant. And, where the allies in that sort of thing are is when men get invited and they say, what's the gender diversity on this panel? And if they say, actually, we've only got men on it, then they're saying, no, I will not sit on this panel. So now I'm at the point where I'm being invited to participate, whether it be in an ad board or on a panel or whatever it is. And I'm like, who else is on here? Where is the representation from, from people of colour, from people who are living in under-resourced countries? Because if you're only talking to white middle-class people who are managing their diabetes, and yes, it is still tough. I'm not in any way minimizing the experience of people like me, but it is very, very different when our color or our race or our religion is not part of the reason that our healthcare is not as good as we would like it to be. I never ever have to think when I walk into a consultation with a healthcare professional, the first thing that they're thinking of is what I That just doesn't happen. And that comes also to the way people, we have this idea that people with diabetes seem to all be these brilliant, gorgeous, thin, wonderful, with type 1 diabetes in particular, people. I'm like, where is the representation so that people look different? If we want people to actually latch on and say, I feel represented or I feel this is talking to me, people have got to look like me when I'm reading or looking at whatever it is that I'm looking at. So that, I guess, has been a big focus probably, for a long time, but not as, I guess, I'm not as, I'm far more vocal about it now than I was probably 5-10 years ago.
It goes to say that no one is doing it right. And we all could do a heck of a lot better when we see things that we don't like. Like, for instance, I should have said, you know what? maybe I'm not your cup of tea, and maybe I'm not saying what you want me to say and how you want me to say it.
Yeah.
But that's not my problem. That's your problem. 2020 came and the pandemic came and the horrible social injustice happened with, you know, the killings of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and so many others, right? Everybody was forced to sit down and watch the news and to pay attention. And then I started seeing these things from different social media platforms. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's me. But I was so used to it that I didn't realize what it was until I started seeing things. So we got a lot. We need our allies. We need people like you've, I wouldn't say taken a back seat. I just don't see you on as much unless you're at a conference or unless you need to pop on because you need to get something off your chest, which is okay. But besides seeing Renza being this baker, I don't see any more of the Renza. And I want to know what happened, because like I said, you were this vocal person. And one day you just shut down.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. And I have had a really difficult 12 months. And I think probably around the middle of last year, I started to feel some real advocacy burnout. And, you know, I mean, that's something that we don't talk about very much with advocates. And I feel that I didn't know really how to cope with it. And I just felt that all of the little things that I deal with and are fine, that they were becoming bigger and bigger, and I wasn't able to bounce back from them. And so that, and that was like, I just think that that was a lot of being really very busy. I was traveling a lot. Like last year, 2019, I was away on average for a week each month. And when I say away, I'm talking about, you know, having been on a flight for 30 hours to get to wherever I was going, and then often only being there for 25 hours or something and then flying back. Like there was a lot of, you know, exhaustion. That was a big part of that. Started to be, I guess, the way that I was being perceived in certain parts of the community. And firstly, I start by saying I'm not everybody's cup of tea or coffee or whatever your beverage of choice is, and I'm okay with that, because not everyone is my cup of tea either. You know, I jokingly say that there are 10 people in the diabetes community that I actually like, and don't get comfortable if you're one of those 10, because hey, it's a movable list. So you could get better off it. But that's not true. I mean, like that.
That's life, right? There's different seasons, right?
But what I mean is that we don't all need to love each other because we have diabetes. Like just the fact that we have diabetes cannot be enough to make us all best friends, right? And right. That's okay. That's perfectly okay. And we all, you know, we find our community, we find our squad, we love them hard. They're the ones that we want to be around. Also perfectly okay. But what I found was that somehow I was being seen in some corners of the community as thinking that I do speak for everybody, that what I say goes, and that when I say something, I think I speak for everyone. Never said that. And also there was some discomfort, I guess, with the way that I would challenge people. So there are a couple of different instances where this happened, and I would challenge health professionals and that didn't go down especially well. But what was different was, because it's never gone down especially well when I said to health professionals, pull your head in, let people with diabetes have a say here, or you should feel uncomfortable about this. But what was different was the way that it was dealt with, because in the past it's just been, okay, well, we agree to disagree. We're probably never going to love each other, but that's okay. You have your opinion, I'll have mine. Sometimes we meet in the middle. Sometimes we have all right, I see your perspective, I will try harder. That comes from both, you know, I've never said that I'm perfect here, that I've learned so much from healthcare professionals. But what was different was that there was sort of, this kind of a bit of a pile on, if you like, where there were a number of people who were, who became quite defensive and who were becoming very critical. And I found that a really difficult situation to deal with, because I don't like, if somebody is having a go at me, I don't go, "Hey, Charisse, hey, this person, hey, that person, hey, that person, can you come and defend me and say how great I am?" I don't do that. I would never do that. No. But that was what was happening. And so then there'd suddenly be all these responses that I'd wake up to, you know, this person has been done nothing but support people with diabetes, whatever. And I'm like, I've never been personal about anyone. It's never been a criticism that somebody isn't a great person or whatever. It's, I don't necessarily think that they are always doing things with the best mind of the person with diabetes. So one of, just to give you an example, one of these things was around, it was around Language Matters. I am very clear about saying I don't, and I never have believed that I own Language Matters. And in fact, sure, Diabetes Australia put out the first position statement. Yay us, awesome, and it is awesome. However, we only did that because the community was talking about it. We picked it up because it was something people with diabetes, that is where the ownership of the Language Matters movement comes from. It is people with diabetes. And somebody said, Language Matters is really important. It's about being nice. And I went, whoa, no, it's not. This is 10 years of work in diabetes organizations, 30 and 40 years of work in a diabetes community. It's not about being nice. Being nice is being annoyed if you mispronounce my name. It makes me sound like a precious flower. This is about changing behaviors and changing attitudes and making people with diabetes not feel disrespected and not feel judged and not feel disempowered. This is far more than that. And of course, that then, you know, I suddenly had people coming at me and saying, "You don't speak for all people with diabetes," like I never said I have. But anyway, so there, that sort of was the start of it, and it's continued, and I've been tone policed by people telling me that I need to tone down the way that I speak, that I need to be more moderate. I had an email sent to me by another person with diabetes from a different country who told me that apparently I seem to actively seek conflict, which I go, right, who can I take on Twitter? Don't do that. And that I make his corner of the diabetes community less enjoyable. So I have definitely, definitely taken a back seat because I feel quite battered and bruised, quite frankly. I don't recognize myself in a lot of ways.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Don't Keep It to Yourself. If you like what you hear, please leave us a comment, rate or review, and tell a friend. If you have any feedback, please feel free to send me an email at don'tkeepittoyourselfpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be safe and be well.